FMR 101.3 FM.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, our subject today is gun-free South Africa. And I'll be talking to Adele Kirsten, who's been a non-violent social justice activist for almost 40 years in South Africa. And she became active in the anti-apartheid movement in the late 70s as a result of her opposition to the injustices of the apartheid system, the growing militarization of the society at that time, as well as her support for those who refused to serve in the apartheid army. Adele is a founding member of Gun Free South Africa and became its director in March 1995. She was responsible for helping build the organization into a national NGO, which, together with the Gun Control Alliance, played an important role in advocating for stricter gun laws in South Africa. In November 2000, the Firearms Control Act was passed. Adele was named the South African Woman of the Year in 2000 under the Media and Communications category. So, Adele, it's lovely to have you here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Rodney, and it's good to be here.
You know, I want to say, I'm going to start what sounds negative. I'm going to say, gun-free South Africa must, for many people, be a pipe dream, because it really is a scourge, isn't it?
Well, it's a scourge, but it's also a crisis. We have 34 people shot and killed every single day in this country. So our focus is on reducing deaths. So we're about saving lives rather than taking people's guns away from them.
Right.
And that has to be the focus. And the way we look at it as is evidence-based. So we look at what are the guns causing the problem. And they're mainly handguns. I think for many people in the country, they think it's assault rifles because we see the cash in transit heists,
yes,
or some of
right.
the tavern shootings.
Yes.
But if you look at the overall use of guns in murder or in robbery, cash in transit heists are a very small proportion of actually the guns that are used. So our focus is a lot on handguns because that's where the most damage is done. But Rodney, back to your opening thing. Gun-free South Africa, it's an aspirational, it's a vision about the kind of society that we think is possible.
Do you think it's possible?
It is, because we have some experience. I guess the organization came into being in late 94, early 95. And those of us who started it had been part of the anti-apartheid movement. And we saw this influx of guns coming into the country, an increase in the use of guns, kind of a bit of an acceptance of guns as being a legitimate way to deal with conflict or differences. And we were worried about the impact that this availability of guns would have on our new democracy. And that was really the kind of motivation and the impetus for the organization. And then through the gun law and through a number of targeted policing operations, our gun deaths almost halved. From 34 in the late 90s, 98, 99, and in 2009, both the kind of health stats and the police stats showed a 50% reduction of gun deaths to 18.
Wow.
So in this country, we have experience of what worked, but it's supported by countries across the world that when you strengthen gun laws, when you reduce gun availability, you reduce gun deaths. And, of course, we know that over the last 12 years, kind of the Zuma administration, from 2011-2012, you see this year-on-year increase in gun deaths and murder overall, and we are back to 34 people being shot and killed a day. So that's an enormous mountain to climb. Mm. But we have gun-free beliefs. We have the resources, the police have the capacity, and we've done this before. The context is slightly different, but there's no reason we should not be able to make a significant impact on our gun deaths in this country, especially now under the new administration, I must add.
Are you confident with this new administration that you'll get somewhere?
I mean, Rodney, I mean, it's been interesting. I'm part of the Cape Crime Crisis Coalition, and we had a meeting with the Minister of Correctional Services on Tuesday. And we've been obviously really monitoring closely the Minister of Police, Senzo Mkunu. And there's this sort of renewed openness to civil society, this engagement of taking us seriously. And it's this kind of healthy, almost competition. It's like we want to demonstrate that the government of national unity is going to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you see what Nkunu has said in his first few days in office, that he's going to focus on firearms and firearm-related crime and illegal weapons.
And you mentioned Zuma earlier, but also having got rid of Celebe is a very good point, isn't it? A very good move.
So you Minister Tele.
The police minister.
I think we're seeing a very different approach with this new minister. And already we're seeing significant increases in weapons being recovered. All of his statements are including firearms as a priority area. So I think certainly we're positive that we're going to see some quite significant shifts in approach.
This is very good news for you, for the society. And just talk to me a little bit about the structure of the society. Do you work with volunteers? Is it a big job? Are there many people involved? Is it quite small and focused?
So the organization, the employed staff is quite small, but it's highly specialized. That it includes research skills, advocacy and sort of lobbying skills, and then sort of grassroots community mobilization, so working with people on the ground. And then we have a really strong and powerful media footprint. It's something that we are really good at. I think we punch above our weight. We are very clear that we cannot do this without strategic partnerships. We never go into a community without being invited in, and we generally work with community-based organizations. So, for example, in Gauteng, we're working with the Youth Crime Desk in places like Ivory Park and Timbisa. We're working with ECD, the early childhood development people. We're also working with taverns, the South African Liquor and Taverns Associations, making taverns gun-free zones. So that's Gauteng. In Western Cape, it's very much working across Cape Flats, but a very strong partnership with Molo Songololo, an ECD organization, but also with the various forums, or what are called ECD forums here.
Yeah.
But we work with the Cape Flat Safety Forum as well, which has a strong footprint in Mitchell's Plain. And it's really, I guess we have three key programs. One is around community mobilization, around building safe communities. So building almost a movement against gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the ground work. The second is the policy advocacy. So kind of more upstream work, looking at the legislative frameworks, not just the gun law. We look at things like the Domestic Violence Act. We look at the Policing Act. So anywhere where there's an opportunity to strengthen the legal framework around the control of guns. And then we have the public awareness education raising aspect, where we think it's really important that people understand the nature and extent of the gun problem in this country, so they can make informed choices about whether or not to get a gun. I think that's part of the debate. But mm-hmm. It's also helping people see the link between legal and illegal weapons. So it's those are our kind of three key ways of working,
okay.
I guess. Yeah.
Let's take a break for music in this conversation, Adele. And what is your first piece of music? What have you chosen for us?
My first piece is Keith Jarrett.
Ah, yes.
He's a jazz musician, but trained classically.
Yes, and he's recorded classical concertos and stuff
as
well.
Yeah, and it's the Cologne concert.
Yes, gosh, that's a famous concert,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it's one of my favorite, and it's this first track. They're long, as you know. We saw him live in Carnegie Hall in New York in 2005, and that was just amazing. He's an interesting performer. Complete silence. He hates it if there's any noise or anything. He will stop playing. A little bit like Abdullah Ibrahim.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, sort of similar. But there's something, you know, about watching him kind of curled over those piano keys and jumping on his seat and making all these sounds. It's completely mesmerizing. Yeah, so he's one of my absolute favorites.
Thank you.
a short excerpt from actually a very long concert known as the Cologne Concert. Mm-hmm. Keith Jarrett, the pianist there. And that, I have to say, Adele, has been requested before. It's a hugely popular concert with Keith Jarrett. My guest on People of Note this week is Adele Kirsten, and we're talking about gun-free South Africa. And one of the things you said was, you know, community awareness and all that sort of thing. When you talk about gun-free South Africa, are you talking about both legal and illegal? In other words, do you mind people buying guns legally? That's a question, isn't it?
Yeah, I think one of the important things for the public to understand is that when we're talking about gun violence and reducing gun violence, we have to talk about both legal and illegal.
I'm sure.
Because there's a very strong, they're completely bound up with each other. And I guess our awareness raising role is to help people see the link. In the public imagination, it's illegal guns. So when people say, oh, gun-free wants to take away the guns from the legal owners, they should focus on illegal guns. There's some truth in that, obviously, because the majority of crimes are committed with illegal guns. But the legal gun trade is a legitimate global trade. So there are major global protocols that regulate the trade between countries. Most guns, 99.9% of guns, were legally manufactured. So when a gun is used in a crime and it's illegal, you know that it was once legal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was once legal.
A mix.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's not like the drug trade where they're, you know, massive kind of illicit manufacturing.
Yes.
You have a couple of homemades, but that's not a big issue in South Africa. And where you do see it, you see it more in KwaZulu-Natal, for example.
So Homemade guns.
Yeah, wow. You just need a piece of metal and a little bit of gunpowder, you know, to make a weapon. Which is why controlling all of the firearm parts is really important, because you can modify a gun relatively easily. And so that's why having a legal framework that is – it's really – under the jurisdiction of the state to control all the guns. The guns that are in the hands of the state, i.e. police, military, even correctional services, but the guns that are in the hands of the civilians, that's the duty of the state, is to regulate that as well.
The legal ones.
Yeah, the legal ones. So when a gun moves into the kind of criminal economy, or what we call, you know, crime guns, once they are recovered, the SAPs, the police have to track and trace. So have to be asking the question, where did this gun come from? So we know most guns that are used in crime will have had the serial number erased. But SAPs have the capacity and the technology to recover the gun and then find out where it came from. And we know the SAP stat shows that close on 24 guns are lost and stolen every single day in this country. So either through loss or through theft, and the majority of those are civilians, guns in the hands of civilians. And often they're handguns, because that's a preferred weapon of choice for criminals, but it's also the weapon of choice for people who want a gun for self-defense.
Well, that was my next question. How do you deal with people who say, but I bought my gun for self-defense? You know, we're living in a terribly dangerous country. I need a gun.
It's a really important question, Rodney, because I think Gun-Free South Africa recognizes that given the high levels of crime, that we are scared.
Mm.
Most of us have been victims of crime or know someone. So that's the reality. It's a tough reality out there.
Mm.
So it's not like, well, don't be scared. You've got nothing to worry about. But we look at what does the evidence tell us. And I think there are two bits of important information. One is that often when people think about gun-related crime, they think about predatory crime, gang-related crime. Three women are shot and killed every single day in this country. And it's often in the home by their intimate partner.
Domestic
with a legal
violence.
Gun. It's domestic violence. Guns in domestic violence.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is someone they know.
Fueled by alcohol very often, as we know.
And, you know, so a gun in the home, when there's domestic violence, when there are a whole range of other things, it's lethal for the women. But I think we know increasingly the impact this has on children. So Gunfrey takes an evidence-based approach, which says guns in the home pose a risk for everyone in the home. So if you're someone who's thinking, I want a gun, look at the evidence. So intimate partner violence, which often is what we call murder-suicide, where the man often takes his own life after he's killed his wife or
girlfriend. Yes, you see that often.
We've just seen that. We see that often with cops.
Yes.
We've seen it this week in Mpumalanga. So that's the one thing. Teenage suicide.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Access to a gun. The means matters. You know, everyone says, oh, well, they would have found another way. Using a gun is much more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Accidental discharge, where, you know, people don't believe this, but people leave their gun under their pillow, on the dining room table. But even children find the key to the gun safe and take it out, play with it, and someone gets shot. These are the risks. And one of the other risks is theft, house invasion.
Mm.
Now, it's not your fault, but you need to understand that you're owning a gun in the context in which guns are prized possessions for criminals. They come into your house, the first thing they want is, do you have a gun?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the data is there. It's not like we're making this up. The second piece of really important evidence is that there is no evidence to show that guns are effective in self-defense.
Really? That's surprising.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that some people have been able to save their lives because they used their gun and did it. But when you're making policy, anecdotes, opinion, that's not good enough. You have to look at your national data.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of global data. We have quite limited data in South Africa. But the data generally shows that you are, you know, four times more likely to be shot if you pull out your gun in self-defense when you are being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then your gun often gets taken off you. So a gun is a risk in the home, and it's not effective for self-defense. And there are a range of criminologists will tell you, crime happens because criminals, there's an element of surprise. They're in groups of four or five. They outnumber you. They outgun you. And there's the element of surprise. And so...
And they're used to violence, whereas you're terrified. You might not shoot straight.
Well, it is one of the questions, I guess, to ask someone if they're going to... Are you prepared to kill? Are you prepared to kill someone to defend your property and your life? I think it's a really important question to be asking yourself if you're thinking of getting a gun.
Gosh, I wouldn't know how to answer that question. I wouldn't own a gun, put it that way. So
yeah.
I'd be terrified, as you say, in the home. Yeah. Just knowing it was there would terrify me.
Yeah.
And also people who, as I said earlier, alcohol fueling anger and frustration and gender violence, gender-based violence.
It's interesting. It's one of the reasons we were surprised at the uptake of the taverns in Tembisa, where they said people are coming to our tavern, or some of them are more like restaurants, groove places is what they call. They're coming to chill. They want to drink. Some of them will get drunk. You know, someone looks skiff at someone else's partner. Someone will stand on someone's toe accidentally. And we know that this is the reality, but we know, having a sign that says no guns allowed, that there might be an altercation, there might be fists used. But our patrons are saying, I really feel safe coming here because I know no one's going to pull out a gun. Doesn't mean there's not going to be some kind of conflict. And so people then in the street or in another suburb are saying, hey, this guy, I see he's getting lots of patrons. What's been the secret? So they're talking to each other. I find it fascinating. We did not expect to get this kind of traction in this kind of sector. So it's what's interesting for us is these are people who aren't necessarily committed to Gunfrey's long-term vision. Necessarily, they might see guns as legitimate in particular circumstances. But they're saying in this situation, we want our tavern gun-free zone. And it works for us because it works for our clients.
This is very good news.
Yeah, this is common sense.
I wouldn't have thought that was happening.
Yeah, so it's a common sense kind of approach.
Right.
Which is, I think, part of what we're also saying is this is a common sense approach about keeping all of us safe. So this notion, you know, again, ask someone, you're in a shop or in the theater or in a restaurant, concert, soccer match, and you're sitting next to someone with a gun.
Yeah, not nice.
You do not feel safe.
Not at all.
No, I don't think anyone will say, yeah, I feel safer with someone.
No,
you don't feel safe.
We're going to have some more music now.
Yes.
Before I'm traumatized. Adele, what is your next piece?
So my next piece is Busi Mhlongo, Urban Zulu. And, I mean, it's wild. It's noisy. She's got an incredibly strong voice. She's no longer with us. And the favorite for me is, I can't remember if I would have seen her live in a place like Baseline in Joburg, you know, which was a big kind of music jazz venue. So it's got a bit of that Muskandi stuff, but for me, road trip, putting this full blast on a road trip. And that was from Joburg sort of to Cape Town, you know, heading towards Bloem with these kind of flat roads. Busi Mhlongo is the person I take with.
Thank you.
You're going to have to back announce that, Adele, that voice and that song. What have you just heard?
Isn't it wild?
Unzimschlange.
Yeah.
And what
yeah.
was the piece called?
Ja. It's a long Zulu, but it's in English it's called African Nation Calm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very well. My guest is the director of Gun Free South Africa, Adele Kirsten. You know what? We've spoken quite a lot about your organization, Gun Free, but when we were opening the program, it said that you'd been a nonviolent social justice activist for almost 40 years. How did you get involved? Was it the realization that you were living in a rather strange society, even when you were very young?
No, I was a bit of a slow kind of developer.
Slow-developing activist.
Yes. Let me say it was 76. When people say, how did you come to do the work you're doing? I just say 1976.
Oh, yes, yes.
It was my first year. I went to Wits University. And 76 was my first year. I had just turned 18. And the Soweto uprising happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I was on a campus where, you know, people were organizing around it. It was terrifying. We had our mothers phoning us saying, are you okay? And in those days, we were using call boxes or what we call
yes.
tiki boxes. And
yes.
there were only a bank of five tiki boxes in the women's – I was in residence. But, Rodney, that's where – I mean, in some ways, one's ashamed to say this, but my eyes were opened. And I guess I'd grown up a fairly typical white South African. I didn't know what was happening in my country.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't.
So much was banned by the SABC in those days. I worked for the SABC from 76.
Oh, really?
And I remember when finally democracy came and we yeah. were shown films, we used to say to each other, we had no idea this was happening on our doorstep.
Yeah. So it opened my eyes.
Mm.
And then I guess through connecting with students, but also I was very involved in the Methodist Church, and there were people like, he wasn't a bishop at that stage, but people like Peter Story, mm-hmm. who was at the Central Methodist.
He's been on this program, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. He was the founder of Gun Free,
right,
together
right.
with me and Sheena Duncan. But, yeah, so it was the sense of what's happening is unjust, it's not right. And towards the kind of late 70s, the first white men, because only white men were conscripted into the apartheid army, the first white men began to take public stances of refusing to serve in the military.
Yes.
And in fact, one of the first, Peter Mole, who has just died a couple of weeks ago, he had done initial camps and then, I mean, initial service and then refused camps. And then his cousin Richard Steele. Both of them, they were in detention barracks at that stage. And then so that's how I got involved to support young men who were opposed to the army. And then again through, I guess, some of my sort of religious, not just Methodist, but there was a church in Vredendorp in Joburg, which is a mixed area. Where the priest Rob Robertson had quite a strong kind of teaching around nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I learned what's called direct nonviolent action, where you sort of put your body in the place of the bulldozers that are doing
the housing,
and that was page view, et
cetera. Yes.
And I guess it was just then, it wasn't like an immediate thing. 76 was the kind of immediate awakening,
yes.
Then it took time for me to find my place in the struggle against apartheid.
What did you do at Wits? What sort of degree, or what were you hoping to do professionally, may I ask?
I was a speech pathologist and audiologist, training.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'd got a state bursary, so I had to work it back. So I finished my degree in 1980. And then practiced in education, and then was also actually at Chris Harney, Baragwanath. It was only known as Baragwanath. I was there in 83, 84.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience as well, I think, reinforced for me that I wasn't sure I could play the most effective role being a speech therapist. Just the kind of services that were available for black patients, the fact that I was not fluent in Zulu, even though we were required to do an immersion course in Zulu. It just felt this wasn't the place where I could make the biggest contribution. So I would say from the early 80s then, I began to, that became my life. And I helped start the End Conscription Campaign, was its national secretary. So worked full-time politically, I would say, for most of the 80s and into the early 90s.
Okay. Now, we need to take another piece of music.
Yes.
And now I see Marta Argerich lurking in the wings.
Yeah, so it's Rachmaninoff 3. She's the pianist. And it is the first track. It's the Allegro. And it's long. It's over 15 minutes. But if we, I guess, if we, the from about the eighth minute, I think it's important to play some of the beginning because it's this kind of delicate but strong piano.
Very strong, yes.
And then
in a minor
it suddenly
key.
Comes into this kind of crescendo.
Right.
It's not, I know my husband doesn't particularly like it because he says it's not calming. It's not like.
No, it's not calming.
Like you can sit and, you know, relax, have a cup of tea.
It's turbulent.
Or your whiskey. It's very turbulent.
Yes.
And I just, it just transports one. Especially if you actually, the first time I heard it, actually, was at a retreat center with someone who loved it, and we were actually lying on the floor. So you heard it kind of through your body.
Yes,
you were,
vibrating.
And the floor
yes.
was carpeted. It was just the most extraordinary experience. And I just think she's the best
she's
performer
brilliant.
Of it.
sadly, there we leave that magnificent concerto, the first movement, part of the first movement of the Rach III, as it's known, Rachmaninoff's third piano concerto. Marta Argerich was the pianist there, and it was another choice of Adele Kirsten, the director of Gun Free South Africa, which we talk about in this Women's Month, by the way, talking about the number of females who are killed. I wondered why. What caused you to form Gun Free South Africa? Because you were involved, you got involved then in activists and politics. What made you form the foundation called Gun Free South Africa?
Rodney, I think it was a bit of, I guess, a natural progression from my kind of non-violence, sort of civil disobedience, non-violent resistance work. Through the End Conscription campaign, I've got a kind of universal objection to military service. It's not a, sort of what was known as the just war theory.
Yes.
And then actually in 91, I went back to practice as a speech therapist. I love the speech therapy. I work mainly with people who stutter and with cerebral palsy. And it's an important part of who I am. So I went back.
So you left Gun Free South Africa?
No, I left ECC, the Five Freedoms Forum.
Right.
It was like around about 1991. I kind of thought, okay, I've done my bit. I'm going to go back to my profession. And I worked for about 3 years. And it was during that very difficult period in our history where there was just this kind of high levels of violence, especially on the East Rand.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Witwatersrand Peace Secretariat was formed. And I was pulled in. I was asked to come and assist with a peace monitoring project in Daveyton on the East Rand, which we then replicated into the Vaal Triangle and into Bekkersdal, finally, on the West Rand. But that had a very strong kind of peace component, conflict resolution, and that's sort of been part of my history as well. And so I was working with people in the Peace Secretariat. This was kind of 92, 93.
Mm-hmm.
And that was then where, you know, we had a lot of knowledge about the kind of guns circulating. And a couple of people in the Peace Secretariat said, unless we deal with this issue of guns. And that included people like Peter Story and Sheena Duncan. But the Archbishop Desmond Tutu was very concerned about it. And so towards the kind of end of 93, 94, we were having this discussion about what is the threat to our actual, you know, voting day elections.
Yes, gosh.
And then there was a sense of we need to get the elections out the way and then come with that idea. And it was a once-off campaign post our 94 elections in December on the first day of reconciliation, 16, to ask people to hand in their guns.
Okay.
So it was a kind of amnesty run by Gun Free South Africa and our allies, but with obviously the police ministry had to okay it.
And did people hand in their guns?
No. We got a paltry, I can't even remember. We were devastated at the, you know, at how few guns were handed in.
Mm-hmm.
But the very important thing is it put it on the political agenda. Is suddenly the new government, and this is the ANC government, took stock and said, this is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And from then, it was like, okay, this was a once-off campaign. It didn't yield what we'd hoped, but it gave us actually something much bigger. And so in the May of 95, we decided to form an organization.
And that was the Gun Free South Africa.
That was Gun Free South Africa.
And then you left for a while. Why did you leave?
I left just after the law had been passed. And we were going into the regulation phase, which is quite a difficult phase because it's incredibly dry, very legalistic, quite hard to mobilize people around. But we then needed to start doing kind of much more on the ground work. I didn't think I was the right person for that.
Okay.
But also I felt I'd kind of been working full time as an activist since I was in my early 20s. I needed a break.
Right.
But stayed in the small arms control world, worked a lot in UN and other structures. Yeah, and I think it was important for me to leave at that moment.
Fair enough. But let's, before we go any further, let's have another piece of music because I'm intrigued by the CD you're holding. It looks as though it's Norwegian.
So it's a guy called Iro Rantala, and he's from Finland.
Oh, he's Finnish.
Yeah,
okay.
He's Finnish, and it's called Can't Get Up. It's really happening mainly in bass keys, so it's nice and fast and quite, as the young ones say, impactful.
Impactful, right. There's some Finnish music for you. Eero Rantara, is that who he was?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and another choice of Adele Kirsten here on People of Note. Adele Kirsten, we've just said you left Gun-Free South Africa because you thought you'd need to expand, but then you went back in 2016 as director, and in the interim you'd written some books as well.
Yes, so my first book was The History of Gun-Free South Africa, A Nation Without Guns. And that really just explained the campaign for stricter gun laws, how we worked in communities. It's just really a record of the organization and the way in which we worked and the strategies we employed to get what we got.
Why did you go back? Did you feel that you had unfinished business there, perhaps?
The board asked me to come back because, in fact, in 2015, 2016, we were expecting an amendment to the gun law. And this is one of the things I would say is one of my kind of strongest skill set is lobbying and advocacy. Okay. And so asked me to come back in to help direct the organization. And
here
8 years later, I'm still here. But I need to begin exiting as well.
But now, before you exit the studio, Adele, thank you for coming in. Do we have reason to be positive about gun-free country?
I it's a long haul. It's lifetime work, but I think certainly the kind of energy that's been given to this issue over the last couple of weeks.
And with our new government.
Yeah, I think yes.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah, it's a long haul, mm-hmm. but I think we're beginning, the right steps are being taken.
Well, keep up the good work. There you go. The director of Gun Free South Africa, Adele Kirsten, has been my guest. And what now is your last track?
My last track is Moses Molulekwa, who also is no longer with us, and it's Mountain Shade.
Adele Kirsten, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rodney. It's been great to be here.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
FMR 101.3 FM.